Oh my God, I'm live. Friday Night Feels. Okay, I'm sorry. It's almost like tradition now. There's really every 2 weeks. I'm sorry if that annoys some people, you know, that it's like, Patrick, get it together. You know, you've been doing this for 2 years, but I have to tell you, I hold my breath every time I connect to Friday Night Feels, because I never know if I'm going to mess it up. But, you know, and for those, if you've ever used Zoom in the last 2 years or Facebook, you know that sometimes people or the companies can do updates. So you might have the perfect plan, and then all of a sudden, like, things don't connect or things don't work anymore. So you kind of have to roll with the punches. So that actually, you know, so happy Friday Night Feels, everyone. A little change of plans. I'm not sure what happened with Kellen. I don't know if there's a miscommunication or he's having technological issues. So I reached out to him, but I was looking forward to hearing from him tonight and be able to share his experiences with all of you. And it was interesting. I reached out to some friends of mine saying, all right, so, I mean, let's be filter free here, because it's Friday Night Feels. It's one of those moments, a really big learning opportunity for me. And I just kind of want to share a little bit of it with you of, you know, what we're doing. What I learned through Friday Night Feels is every week, every time I do it, I learn, I grow, I make a ton of mistakes. And it's one of those things where, you know, when you find your journal or your diary from fifth grade and you're like, oh my God, how did I ever sound that dumb? Or how did I ever see the world that way? I feel that Friday Night Feels sometimes is that way for me, where every episode makes me go out of my comfort zone, and it makes me, you know, forces me to develop new skills and to practice the skills I've acquired and to be able to really hold a presence that I can be proud of being able to say, this isn't easy. This is difficult. There's, when I'm doing my Hold Me Tight workshops, I talk a lot about where couples need to go out on their vulnerability ledge and being able to really feel exposed. So I reached out to a couple of friends and I said, I know, kind of one of those oh shit moments of, do you post? Do you record? What do you do? So what I've learned in everything, especially in the coaching world and marketing and business, is, you know, do something that's going to challenge yourself. So I decided to go live just to say hello for anyone who's out there in Facebook land, for myself also into practice and, you know, just to connect, because this is something, you know, and I talk about this every Friday Night Feels, this was something that I created when everything was really shut down with COVID. And it's really become an important part of my life personally and professionally, because it lets me connect to people. And I think that was, you know, I have that conversation with people, is we still have to remind ourselves that we're still in a pandemic, that it's still happening, it's still ongoing. And the last 2 years have been really horrific in so many different areas. And having Friday Night Feels is such an honor for me, because I get to connect with people in a different way. I get to really explore people in the podcast world. And as I was saying, learning, but it's also fun and magical. And I was saying, it helps you to really create a new platform that you may never have done before, and to be able to tap into some creative juices of what's going on in your world and hearing other people's experiences. And once again, really coming back to that connection. And for those of you who don't know, I've posted this on my social media, is I do a weekly free newsletter, just, you know, every month is usually a different topic of just things that I've experienced or other people have written to me about that. That I feel sometimes that they just need a soapbox and to be able to talk about it and share my experience and be open to hearing other people's experiences, whether they're similar or different or, you know, completely unique compared to mine. And this instance of having kind of like a no-show guest connected to what I was thinking about writing for next week, of really being able to look into those beliefs of, am I enough? And when you have something that falls through, you know, what do you do with it? Do you just throw your hands up in the air? Do you just get frustrated? I don't know about any of you who might be watching or will be watching later who can relate to one of those weeks where, and I try to be very articulate with this, where it's not necessarily a bad week, but it's a hard week. And I think sometimes people confuse that of, oh, you know, I feel bad for you, you've had a bad week. It's like, that's not what I'm saying. There's such a difference between having a bad week and having a hard week. And having a hard week, you get tired, you get worn down, you get exhausted. And going back to what I was saying a little bit about why I wanted to go live, was it makes you put someone else first and makes you work through all of your own personal crap and being able to look at and see what's happening in your life and how to be able to keep it and honor and acknowledge the hardships that you're experiencing, but also to be able to say, yeah, this is really shitty. This is really hard, but it's not going to stop me. And one of the quotes that I recently read that really stuck with me, you know, when you're just having a rough moment and you're going through some, trying to figure it out, how to like get in a better mood, you know, when you've just kind of like been off kilter. You know, the only people who fail are the ones that never try. And I just absolutely love that, because it doesn't matter if it works out or if it doesn't. It doesn't matter if the guest shows or doesn't show. It doesn't matter if the week was shitty or not. It's like you still showed up. And it looks like our guest is arriving. So let's go live. I've never done this before. Friday Night Feels. Giddy up. Hold on. Stay tuned. Hello.
Hi, I am so sorry I was late. I was recording a script for a video and I just lost track of time, and I looked up and saw it was quarter after and had a heart attack.
Do you need medical assistance?
No, I'm good. I am just so rude. I apologize for being so rude.
That's okay. I actually decided we're actually live, which is something a little different, because normally, you know, I wait till we're on the same page, but I guess it's a whole new adventure, right? And you're a catalyst.
So, I am a catalyst, and I love it, and I'm okay that we're live, so I'm apologizing to your live. I was 15 minutes late and made him sit here and wonder where the heck I was, so here we are.
Well, no, and what I said to the audience was, you know, I've had my fair share of technology issues, so I'm just hoping that everyone's okay and safe and sound, so
we were okay, we were safe, we were sound, and there's no techno babble. I was busy recording literally a video script for a motivational YouTube video that I'm shooting. And
oh my gosh.
It'll be done in a week or two. Yeah, and I'm going to create original music. It's about 35 minutes long, and it's called You Own Your Life.
Ooh.
Or Your Life is Yours, I actually think, is what I'm going to use. Your Life is Yours, and it's a 5-part script, and it's 35 minutes long, and it took me longer than I thought, and so here I am apologizing.
Okay, hey, I'm glad you made it. It's so nice to connect with you. Do you want to kind of introduce yourself a little bit and kind of share a little bit? I mean, I didn't get to that point, so if you want to jump in.
I'm Kellen Flukiger. I live in Edmonton, Alberta. This is not what it looks like outside. This is the summertime. We have perma snow on the ground, and we'll till April sometime. Starts snowing in November and snow till then. But this is a nice, beautiful background I have. I am here on this podcast because I love spreading the message of hope, recovery, and possibility. And the Kellen you see before you, if you saw me 15 years ago, you wouldn't even recognize.
Wow. So tell us a little bit. So I can just share a little bit of the bio that you sent me is of going through decades of depression, addiction, life-threatening illness, and a near-death experience. Kellen has become the ultimate catalyst to help motivated people melt barriers, move mountains, and mobilize superpowers to achieve their true desires. Did you want to?
No, keep going. Finish it.
I'm very inspired, so I kind of want to keep going.
Like, go for it, dude.
I want to show up. Like, I want to be part of this call. I feel as a coach and keynote speaker, Kellen's masterful approach helps people get past old stories, change beliefs, and create a life context to reach even goals that seemed impossible.
So it's a very impressive beginning, and thank you, and it's all absolutely true, and it's even more amazing than it sounds. So Melt Barriers, Move Mountains, and Mobilize Superpowers is as awesome as it sounds, and I don't mean to be weird, but it's kind of like that.
No, that is literally perfect for Friday Night Feels, because we're all about the magic. As you can see, I'm in Arendelle tonight, because I'm in northern New York, so we're ice and cold, so I can relate to the Alberta. and, you know, just so a little background, you know, Kellen and I met, you know, connected through Facebook groups, which most of you know that's how I get to meet a lot of the amazing guests that come on. And having Friday Night Feels, I was just talking a little bit about before you popped on, Kellen, of how it was created, you know, when the COVID pandemic really took over. And there was such a loss in my life of that disconnection and being able to create a show. I really had no idea what I was doing. And as a mental, it was like, you know, I do mental health therapy. I'm a certified life coach. I, you know, do all these different things, but creating a podcast was never in the cards until all of a sudden I said, I guess I'm doing it. And being able to have a platform for people such as yourself to share their experiences of healing, of hope, of resilience is exactly what we're here for.
Well, so the story I'm about to tell you is impossible, but I'm going to tell you anyway.
Okay.
It's outlined in one of the 16 books that I've written called Tightrope of Depression, My Journey from Darkness, Despair, and Death to Light, Love, and Life. If you want to read details, but I'll just summarize the amazing events of 2007. So I was raised in a two-parent home in San Francisco Bay Area, sort of middle-class-ish. And looked like things should be okay, except my mom was real fanatic about religion, and she applied discipline that today would be felony child abuse. Okay. In those days, that was, you know, discipline. And I remember even in high school getting dressed last in the locker room because I didn't want anyone to see I was black and blue, you know, that sort of thing. And beatings were kind of normal. I remember hiding in my room, wondering why I was so awful that I got beat every day. The bottom line of all that was that I grew up not ever talking to anyone, believing that I was fundamentally flawed, and I spent my entire adult life from when I left home at 17 to when I was 52, so 35 years, trying to prove that I was okay, to get the approval of my mom, you know, the stamp on the forehead, approved. Mm-hmm. And of course, you can't ever get that. But what it did is I lived the roller coaster of depression. Mm-hmm. And what that looked like was I knew how to do one thing. I knew how to make money. Mm-hmm. So I had big career success. But I had three failed marriages. I was married and divorced three times. I was in and out of rehab. I had various stints in, you know, secret rehab centers and addiction problems and all that sort of stuff. And I was completely out of touch with who I was as a person. I knew how to be whoever I needed to be in the moment or in a role, like a method actor, give me a legend and put on the Armani three-piece and go down and do battle and do whatever I needed to. And when the lights went out and I was alone, I had no idea who I was or what to do. So that sort of roller coaster went on for 35 years through ridiculous amounts of money. I would get big positions. I would sabotage him. I worked on the governor's staff in California at one time, and his chief of staff yanked me in the office one day because she was worried that my scandals were going to take down his administration, you know, that kind of stuff. So really, really high profile stuff. In 2007, after 35 years of that, when I was 52, I had a divine intervention. And it went like this. It was an August, Friday in August of 2007. I came home from work. At the time, I was single again for the third time. I had four of my 10 children living with me, four teenagers. Three were grown up and married, and three were somewhere else with, I hate to say this, one of my exes. But anyway, I was a single dad for four kids, and I was going to go out and party. I was a $3,000 a week cocaine addict at the time. And making so much money that didn't matter. Mm-hmm. And when I got ready to go out on that Friday night, I had the urge to turn on the television. Now, that doesn't sound like anything, except when I went to do it, I realized I didn't know how. I never watched TV, and I didn't know how to turn it on, and I had the latest, greatest, cool stuff. The electronics guys had come in and put all this stuff in. I realized I didn't know how to turn it on, so I asked one of my kids, my 16-year-old daughter, you know, she turned on the thing and threw the remote at me and stomped out of the room, you know, dipweed, right? And it landed on a program that I'd never heard of. That wasn't weird because I didn't watch TV. I'd never heard of any of them. But the name of the program was Intervention, which, if you know TV, it's a reality TV show about people who stage intervention for busted loved ones, right? Mm-hmm. And the protagonist was a high-ranking executive with a cocaine problem. And so I watched about 10 minutes and I said, yeah, I'm not watching this crap. And I turned it off and I went to do dishes and did a few more things. And I was getting ready to go out like right then. And it would have been like a 3 or 4 days before I came back. And I had to turn the TV back on. Now, this time I knew how. So I turned it back on and that program started over at the beginning. And no, I don't have a DVR. And no, it's not on the schedule. And no, it can't do that. But it did. It scared me. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm supposed to watch this. So I watched it. It went poorly. The guy yelled at his family, turned down all help, stomped out, and all that bad stuff. But it scared me bad enough that I went to bed instead of going out to party. And when I went to bed, I went to hell. And what I mean by that is I had this sensation that I was somewhere out of body, and I was in a big theater, and I was watching this parade of show on the stage, and it was from my early years to present, but the focus was on all the suffering that had been inflicted on me as a kid with all the abuse and everything, and that I had inflicted on others with my addictions and lying and divorces and everything else. But never in my experience had I ever seen, witnessed, imagined such suffering. The scene was just horrific, and it went on for a long time, and finally a voice said, it is enough, just like that. And so I woke up, and it was weird because the sun was shining in the window, and it was weird because the windows faced west. And I got up, and it was Saturday afternoon at 5 o'clock. So I'd been somewhere for 18 hours.
Wow.
And I got up, and I realized, okay, I've been invited to change. I have no idea what I'm going to do. I have no idea how to do this, but I've got to do something different. So I threw away $1,000 worth of stuff I had laying around and didn't know what to do. I went back to work on Monday, and the other half, so that got me sober, straight up. I threw everything away, never touched it. $3,000 a week to nothing, cold turkey, straight up, one day, that's it. But that got me sober, and that wasn't the problem. The real problem was the depression. How did I get there in the first place? So that piece of the intervention happened in 2 weeks. In the position I had, I used to get a lot of free stuff. Okay. So think about, you know, CEOs, people want to be nice to you. People wanted to be nice to Kellen because I made big decisions. And so I got all kinds of stuff, right? And one of the things I got was a pair of tickets to go see a Yo-Yo Ma concert. If you like classical music, you know who that is. And if you don't, you don't. But in the classical world, he's like, ah. So I thought, okay, cool. It would be a real shame to waste this other ticket. So I asked in the groups that I managed who likes classical music. And some lady in one of the groups said, well, I do. And I said, have I ever given you anything before? And she said, no. I said, okay, fine. We'll see you there. Gave her the ticket. And we met at the venue, and the concert was spectacular. And halfway through the show, and I got to remember, I'm 2 weeks stone cold sober at this point, right? Halfway through the show, I had this feeling come over me, and I recognized from 2 weeks before, and this voice said in my mind, you need to marry this woman. And I said, you're insane. I've screwed that up 3 times already with some other messes in between, not happening. Later that night, we were backstage because, of course, they were backstage passes.
Of course.
Right, of course. And so the voice came back and said, comma, and you need to tell her tonight. And so I argued like crazy because I thought, you know, she can have me arrested.
Right.
For harassment, you know, whatever. I mean, come on.
Right.
And I don't even know her that well. I mean, I knew who she was. She worked in one of my groups and stuff. And I'm like, this is nuts. But you don't win those arguments. So I did. And it went about like you would have expected. Are you out of your mind? What are you talking about? Are you insane? But within 2 weeks, She had her own set of experiences, and so she resigned her career. I walked away from not only the job, but the entire industry. Wow. And we walked off into the sunset, and about 2 months ago, we celebrated our 14th wedding anniversary.
Oh my gosh, that is amazing.
Well, here's the reason that's so important, because she was the angel, literally, that was sent to help me with the depression side. She was unflagging in her support. She found counselors for me. She, you know, the first 3 or 4 years was nuts while I tried to figure out how to be a person. Right. She taught me how to be a friend, how to have a friend, how to tell the truth.
She taught you love.
Like all of it. Like I had no idea how to be a person, and I'm 52 years old at this point, right? And so between those two things, my life completely changed. Since 2007, I've written 16 books. I've created a coaching practice. I walked away from the energy industry, which I was in, and I've never been back. And that, so if you saw me 15 years ago, you wouldn't even know the person. This is who I am today. That's the story.
That is incredible. I mean, I don't know what other word. Like it.
I know.
It's amazing. And not only did you find love and healing and hope, you're paying it forward to not only help clients, but to help coaches and people become coaches and to hear your story, to be able to pay that forward.
Well, you know, people ask me a lot of time, well, what do you do? You know, what do you do for fun or whatever? I only do one thing. I have a commitment right now to help 10 million people discover, develop, and serve with their divine gifts. That's it. So from the first breath in the morning to the last one at night, whether I'm writing, and like I said, I've written a ton of books and I'm in the middle of six more, whether I'm coaching groups or individuals, or I own a recording studio and I do music also, and I'm pointing over there because it's over there, whether I'm, and no matter what I'm doing, like with Tightrope, I didn't want to just have a book. So I wrote an album of music, 11 songs that tell stories from the book. And then when I got that done, I thought, oh dear, that's not all. Then I wrote the sequel called Down from the Gallows. And then I did an album with this too, in volume 3 of what I promise will not be longer than a trilogy, because I can't stand the idea. We'll be out in January and that album's half done.
Wow. So
that's all I do. It's like, I'm here to help everybody, no matter who they are or where they've been, understand you're a divine being. Don't be as thick-headed as I was. There's nothing interesting or special about me. I just finally said yes to the 2x4.
And do you find that people who have suffered with addiction can connect to you?
Well, yes, I do.
Because I've worked with a lot of people who with mental health and addiction, and one of the components is that they struggle with is believing that they deserve more, even if they get clean or even if they're doing better. There's still a lot of those hidden beliefs of shame, of regret, of remorse, of, you know, how do I move forward, or how do I become more when I've done so much damage?
Thank you. It's like you're, it's like we had a meeting before we had this meeting for you to say the right things. The book 16 that I just finished in December, that'll be out at the end of March, the name of the book is Forgiveness, A Journey of Courage to a Place of Freedom and Power. And whether you are burdened with rocks of anger or revenge towards someone who unfairly hurt you, or your backpack is full of rocks that are of a different color but just as heavy, of guilt and shame and self-loathing for all the hurt and pain and anguish you have inflicted on others as an addict, or with your lies and unfaithfulness and all the stuff that you did, forgiveness is still the answer. It is the only way to get rid of the rocks. All you're doing by carrying around that guilt and loathing and shame is preventing you from being the light and doing the service that you could be, because you're carrying around those rocks. You're not doing anyone else any favors by carrying them. Learn that forgiveness and let us all enjoy your light.
Right. Right. And I think that's a message that so many people need to hear. And I'm going to share this with you just because, you know, why not? While I was getting ready for tonight, I was contacted by someone else to join Friday Night Feels at some point, who's a forgiveness focused coach. That's so cool. It was just, and I didn't know anything like that existed. I never heard of it before. So we're going to connect next week, but how that just blends in perfectly to what you're working on and that we're talking about. I guess forgiveness is the theme of the night.
Well, it is. And after you connect with them, I'd love to connect with them. So perhaps tell them about me or whatever, and maybe we can connect. Because I'm going to run a forgiveness challenge, like a 3-day forgiveness challenge for people after the book comes out. So toward the end of March, 1st of April. And if they're a forgiveness-focused coach, maybe there's something we could or should do together.
That would be I love that collaboration. It's funny, one of the phrases that I always struggle in my field with people is when they've been traumatized, such as you're saying, like when things have happened to them, and they are told by people they love or they trust, you know, forgive and forget. And to me, I always that always takes a little bit of my breath away, because you can't forgive, you can't forget something because it's changed you. And forgiveness, I think, and I'd love to hear your perspective on it. I think people have a really outdated understanding of what forgiveness is. They think forgiveness is, I have to let it go, never think about it again, and welcome you into my home. And the conversations I love to have people of, it's the forgiveness isn't really about them. It's about, like you say, freeing yourself from those stones, from those attachments, because until you do, they have power over you.
You've said it perfectly. I have an example I use of that with a dog. We got a dog when he was like born in August, got him in November, so 3 or 4 months old. And on New Year's Eve that year, and this was around the same time, this 2007-8, the New Year's Eve right after this stuff happened. So Joy, oh, what I didn't tell you is the woman, my wife, her name is Joy.
Shut
like
up.
Like you can't make this stuff up, okay?
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, okay. So Joy and I had been married 15 minutes, essentially, not really. And we got a dog, right? And the dog was a rescue. It was a very nice, purebred, expensive dog. But the person that had it, something changed in their life and they couldn't keep it anymore.
Right.
So we had a rescue dog and just a few months old. And on New Year's Eve, 2007 to 2008, we were roughhousing around the house. And I'd never had a dog before, so I wasn't as careful as I could have been. And the dog bumped a speaker stand and the speaker fell off and fell on the dog's paw and broke all the metatarsals in the paw. So on New Year's Eve, we're going to the emergency midnight. It's right before midnight, you know, vet, et cetera, et cetera. And they did surgery and did everything they could, but, you know, they told us, you know, we don't know if we can fix this right. It's maybe a limp when he grows up, like forever. So sure enough, as the dog got older, when he ran around a lot or when it got cold, you know, he had a limp. Mm-hmm. So here's the reason that ties into forgiveness. A dog, by its very nature, is the most forgiving of all animals. The dog, I felt terrible forever because I felt like it was my carelessness that caused this thing. Now, that dog has since passed, and the passing of it is another whole story on the spiritual journey, but we won't even get into that tonight. But the dog had a limp forever, and I felt responsible, and I felt bad about that. And here's the way that ties into forgiveness. The dog long since forgave me. Mm-hmm. And was open and willing and whatever. But the shaping, I call it the shaping. If someone has hurt you or the abuse I suffered, it shapes you. It affects you. And like the dog, you may have a limp for the rest of your life, either a metaphorical limp or an actual limp. Mm-hmm. And your heart can be as pure and loving and forgiving as you want, and you still have a limp. Mm-hmm. And the dog was a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. Long since forgotten and dealt with the limp. Now, that limp may mean you can't be around certain people. It may mean you can't, certain people may or may not be worthy of your trust. That's a different issue. But carrying the burden of fear or anger or a need for retribution or punishment or negativity, all that does is hurt you in the metaphor, you know, drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die and all that stuff. Forgiveness is not pretending something away. We couldn't pretend the limp away. Forgiveness is not absolving someone. Only God can do that. So we don't get to do that, but we can unburden ourselves. And I have long since forgiven my mom and all those, and I never think about it anymore, but I still have had to deal with that shaping my emotional limp in the way I've had to deal with it all my life. So understand, forgiveness is a gift you give yourself. And whatever you need to do to protect yourself in good conscience is just good and right. And you're actually doing service to those that might damage you because you're preventing them from doing anything that is a manifestation of their weakness. So it's not about pretending anything away or absolving things or ignoring limps that may be permanent.
Right. I love that because I think so many people, you know, it's one of the debates I've seen with people, especially in the recovery world, you know, where they'll say, you know, like it is what it is, or, you know, a lot of those phrases which come from a place of love, but invalidate the trauma. And what I work with of saying, well, that's real. You had your reaction, you had your experience. Let's figure out how do we move forward so it doesn't hurt you anymore.
I love
it. And I think it, and one of the conversations that I tend to have with people about forgiveness is there's so much fear in it, right? They're so afraid of getting hurt again, but they also, they don't ever take the time to say, I'm actually really afraid that I don't trust myself. And knowing it's, they always focus on being able to, not being able to trust other people, but is really a big component of that is, well, can I trust myself in my decisions? Can I trust myself to know when it's dangerous? Can I trust myself to know when it's unsafe? Or do I not have that capability?
Well, your experience is good and right, and I certainly agree with it. And forgiveness is well understood and well implemented would be a great liberator of many folks and would allow a lot of fear to disappear. It would allow a lot of healing to happen and allow a lot of people who are carrying unnecessary rocks to blossom into the world.
It's funny that we're talking about this. I had this experience once when I was trying, I was like, had my own emotional, there was a blockage, right? And I was trying to, I was like praying about it. I was doing every technique and I just like kept, I couldn't figure it out. And I went from the kitchen to the living room because I was just kind of asking, praying, like, what is the problem here? And then all of a sudden I sat down and said, oh, you're still trying to resolve it through anger. And I thought, and I just started to laugh because it's like, oh, that I'm going into an old behavior. Anger is not what's going to bring me freedom. And it's not what's going to break. And as soon as I did it, it was like a bubble just popped and the tension just melted away. And I was able to see I was holding on to something. I was holding on to an anger that I thought was protecting me, but it was actually harming me.
I love that. And one of the things that, you know, if people do bad things, if someone abuses someone, the person who's abused has the shaping and they have the limp and they have all that stuff they got to deal with. And the other piece of forgiveness, allowing it to be effective in your life, is trusting that somewhere there will be some kind of reckoning and justice, but it's not mine to mete out.
Right.
I don't have either the authority or the ability or the position to do it. And as long as I hold on to that bitterness, anger, resentment, revenge, lust, whatever it is, as long as I hold on to that, the only person I'm hurting is me.
Right.
And when I finally learned, look, my mom is going to do whatever, I mean, that's out of my league. You know, I don't have to worry about that. That's between her and her maker.
Right.
I don't have to do that. And I'm free. I don't have to solve that problem.
Right. What do you find in your experience the reasons that people struggle with forgiveness so much?
Because they equate it with absolution. They feel like, I'm forgiving you, therefore I have to pretend like it doesn't happen.
Right. And you get off the hook.
You're off the hook. And I can let you off the hook if I trust that there's eventual justice. If I don't believe that, and I don't think that there's going to be some reckoning and you're on your own path and you have to do whatever that is with the divine, then, you know, you carry this bucket around wanting there to be justice, not knowing exactly what it ought to be. And you know that's true because you hear people say, oh, they should be tarred and feathered and shot and pissed on and, you know, these ridiculous things because it's reflective of your level of emotional pain. Well, no one in their right mind would think that things that we utter in that anger should actually be done to another person.
It's, and I completely agree with that. And I can see that of, and what's interesting is even when they've gotten that vengeance, and let's say they've seen it or they've seen that anger and that pain is still there. And it's like, well, you got what you wanted, but now that festing that is still there. So maybe we need to look at this in a different way.
I heard somebody say once, you can never get enough of what you don't need because what you don't need won't satisfy you. And you've seen it in movies, right? Somebody's mad at somebody and they did an evil and they chase them all over the world. And they finally get him and they get him. They put him in jail or they kill him or whatever. And then they turn around and say to their partner or their cohort or whatever, I thought when I shot him, I'd feel better, but I don't.
Yeah, I know. You know,
it's the wrong answer.
Right. And then they've even suffered more loss.
Yeah.
Because of all the pain. And then there's more trauma. And how do you, when you have people come in, like whether it's clients or people who are coming in for coaching to learn how to be coaches, how do you guide them to work through this? Because it's such a fiery topic.
Well, there's a couple of things.
People have such strong beliefs about it.
They do. And here's the thing I finally learned about coaching. I was a big dog, high power executive, blah, 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 for a long time. But I did that out of a need to prove something. When I became a coach, I had to start all over by figuring out who I was and what I believed and everything else. And so no matter what, and this is the core of personal development for me. No matter what a person comes to me to talk about, whether they want to make more money, often people think business, I need to start a business, I need to fix my business, I need to work less, I need to make more money, blah, blah, blah. Or I need to fix a relationship, or I need to do this in my life, and it doesn't matter what it is. After a month or two, it always comes back to one thing, and that is a conscious choice about how you choose to show up in the world every day. Like, who am I being? Am I being a person who's looking for light and growth and harmony? And am I adding good to the world? Or am I being a person who's negative and hard? So if a person comes in and they're burdened and they're determined to stay married to their stories or their demand for justice or their vision of what the world ought to be and unwilling to explore what I call the view from another mountaintop, and I'll tell you why in a minute, they have to be willing to explore that opportunity. If they're not willing, as long as I wasn't willing to do that, I couldn't heal. What I mean by the mountaintop was one of the things my wife, Joy, the magic, the angel did, is she's a very direct person and she talks, that's what she thinks and stuff, but she's very kind. And because of my depression, I always had the viewpoint that everything that was wrong around me was my fault. And I was responsible for everything, and I should have already understood that and handled it and all that other stuff. So the way we described it between us is I always felt like somebody was sanding my eyeballs with sandpaper, like I felt emotionally attacked all the time. And so one day she said something to me, and I took it that she was attacking me, and I said to her, why are you attacking me? She said, I wasn't at all. I just was asking this or that. And I got frustrated, and I said, any reasonable third party that had heard you say those words that you said to me, there's no other way they could interpret them. They could not be interpreted any other way. Like, what else could they
possibly mean? Wow, you brought the big guns.
Like, what else could they possibly mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, I didn't mean that. And so I was sitting to ponder, what she said. And here's what happened to me. I used to have season passes to a nice ski resort that I went to every weekend. And there was a lift that went up one side of a valley to a mountaintop. And it overlooked the valley on the right side, and then you skied down that mountain. There was another lift that went up a mountain this way, and it overlooked roughly the same valley, only on the left side of the lift.
Right.
And it was the same valley from the right side of the left side, but it looked different. Mm-hmm. And as I sat and thought about her question, I changed the language of what I'd said. At first I'd said, well, what else could you mean? And I hold this whole speech about, if anybody'd heard, they would know that you meant whatever. And I dropped all the drama and I just simply said, okay, what else could it mean?
Mm.
Without drama, just what else could it mean? Mm-hmm. And then this vision of these two lifts came up in my mind, and it occurred to me, well, wait a minute, there is another mountaintop. meaning there's another way to look at this valley. And the whole thing just sort of appeared, and the whole framework of all the things that I had assumed that everything just sort of crumbled, because it came to me to understand in that moment, there's always another mountaintop. Mm-hmm. Like there's another way to look at this. There's another lift. There's a view of the valley from the other side. And it changed everything. I thought, holy crap, there is another mountaintop. Oh, what the heck? And then I looked at the words, and I thought, well, you know, it could mean this, it could mean that. And when I dropped the drama and had that picture in my mind, it was like, holy shit. You know, I've been living in the lenses that I have. And then I realized, of course, at first I treated it as an indictment. Well, you don't see the world the way it is. You see the world the way you are. And then it's like, well, duh, I only have one set of lenses. I have to see the world the way I am. But right. The secret was simply learning that there are other glasses.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's not a competition.
No, it's not. There are other glasses. There are other mountaintops.
Yes.
Okay.
And they're not trying to take anything from yours.
Yeah. Just another lift, another view of the valley.
Did you share that insight with Joy?
Oh, I did. Oh, I did.
Okay. Was she thankful?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That listen, you were like starting to hear that she wasn't.
This is the woman. She found me one shrink to talk to. She found me all kinds of them. Then I burned through a bunch of them. But my favorite guy was one guy that was 10 years older than me. He was in his 70s. He had a long hair, ponytail, ex-biker, ex-drug addict. Oh, by the way, PhD forensic psychologist.
Love it.
Now that cat I could talk to, it's like, you know, and so your question earlier, do you connect? Well, yeah, I could talk to him because there wasn't anything I could say that he didn't know.
Right. That's amazing. And she
found him. Like I didn't find him. She did the research.
So is she in the coaching world now since she left the other industry?
No, she's my business partner. She runs, she's a degree designer. She handles our website. She runs all of our contractors. She does all of our back-end stuff and click funnels and all that stuff that we do, our products, and manages our social media stuff. And she has her own clients. She runs a publishing company and does publishing of my books and some of our client books. I help people write books and stuff like that.
Okay. So if people wanted to reach out to you, you know, like what would they be finding as what you offer?
Well, I offer three kinds of, well, first of all, with a weird name like Kellen Flukiger, I can't hide. So if you put my name in on Google, there's thousands of hits and there's only two of us in the world. And the other one's my oldest son.
Oh,
Facebook, LinkedIn. It's like, I'm there.
Right.
I can't hide. YouTube, all that stuff. So if people work, there's three things. One, there's all the free stuff. I do all kinds of stuff. I started a podcast the same time you did, beginning of the pandemic. That's a funny story, too. March of 2020, Joy gets a call from somebody that knows I do motivational speaking and stuff. Lockdowns are just starting. Cases in Europe are going crazy. We're scared. And maybe for 5 minutes, we all thought, holy crap, this might be Armageddon or something, right? All right. So some guy calls her and says, does Kellen have a podcast? Because he was looking for something to listen to, right? And we didn't, but she said, yes. And she came downstairs and said, we have a podcast.
I love Joy.
Yeah, and so I do too. And so I said, okay, so if we're going to have a podcast, I'm going to do it. So I started a daily podcast called Your Ultimate Life, which is a 15-minute daily expression of how to live a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy you create with your divine gifts. And I just recorded this morning episode 636.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
So we missed a few days when we moved, but we'll be up to 2 years pretty quick, and that's 730, but we'll get there. And so I plan on doing it forever. It's fun. It's a labor of love, like you know a podcast is. And I really want to, right now and in front of your listeners, just honor you completely, because anybody that's doing a podcast or anything like it is doing a lot of love. It's a labor of love. It's a lot of work in an effort to add good to the world. And so I want to honor you completely for effort, your energy, and the love that you're bringing to the world and to your listeners. So thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
But anyway, so the things they have, I have free stuff. I have a podcast with a million episodes. I've written 16 books and I've got 6 more underway. I've gotten music on Spotify and a whole bunch of other places. I put a lot of stuff up on Facebook, and I've got hundreds of videos on YouTube.
Okay.
All designed to help people create that ultimate life. And that's all free. People that want to coach, I do 2 things. I have 90-day group coaching or situations where people run for at least 90 days trying to get a certain goal. So there's
okay.
And they're small groups, like 6 or 7 people. Okay.
Okay.
So I can give them as much individual attention as I can. So there's small group coaching, and then I do private coaching. Mm-hmm. And there really isn't any difference. The curriculum of any of the coaching that I do is just based on what a person wants to do.
Okay. Can I, if you don't mind me asking, I'm going to go kind of in a little bit different direction, because I love talking to other coaches. I love coaching, because in the therapy world, it was historically, it's really seen as people who are becoming coaches are trying to do therapy without doing therapy. And that was one of the biggest myths. So during COVID times, I said, I really want to explore this. And I got to meet some coaches, and they've all been amazing. And they are just finding different ways to help people. And then I became certified in coaching. What was, and I love it, and I think it's very different than therapy. What is your experience when people come to you and they're like, oh, life coaching, is that like telling someone how to get a latte? What kind of, visions do people have of what a coach is that you've encountered?
So there's three different things. One, sometimes people think it's like therapy. Okay. And to them, I say, look, therapy is like if you go to the doctor, you are hurt or damaged in some way and you need some help to get back to functional, normal, okay, average, regular, equilibrium. Mm-hmm. So you go to a doctor and he sets your leg or your arm or gives you some meds for your throat or whatever. Like I went to a counselor, I went to a therapist, I've done that for a lot of hours. And it's because I considered myself to need some help to get back to equilibrium. A coach is someone who is going to start there and is focused on being the catalyst to help someone maximize their potential. Mm. You know, like you want to do something new, big, impossible, dream. You got big stuff you want to do. And so that's why I use the word catalyst.
I love that word.
For personal transformation, because I literally am the guy who helps people do things they don't believe they can do.
Right. And it's, isn't it? It must be fascinating when you're a coach, because I can see it coaching, but in therapy is you can see beyond the blockages and you see what's in there. And I get so excited when I'm working with someone or a couple or a group of, oh my God, you just see the magic in their eyes and in their spirit. They just haven't bought into it yet. They just haven't seen it.
Completely love that. So the other confusion happens is the difference between coaching and teaching. Mm-hmm. Teaching is wonderful, and to some extent consulting. Teaching, which I did a lot of in my professional career, teaching is I know how to do something you don't know how to do. So someone might hire me to teach them how to be an audio engineer in the studio. I've run a recording studio for 40 years. I used to run a master class for a local audio engineering school, not here, but when I lived in Phoenix, and they would bring their, graduate students over, and I'd give them a hands-on all day in the studio, showing them how to do different things. And then I'd never see them again. Mm-hmm. So that's teaching, and that's wonderful, and it has a place. Information's getting to be less and less valuable because it's mostly free. But teaching has a place. Coaching, on the other hand, is helping someone apply actualize, do, complete, finish, get over the finish line. Mm. I have a lot of fun descriptions for coaching. I call it the people encouragement business. I call it the heart refurbishment business. I call it blind spot protection service. I call it anxiety annihilation service. I call it the courage creation service. I call it the motivation mining business. I mean, you know, there's lots of ways to describe it when you're trying to deal with those barriers and blocks that we all have, the stories, the leftover limps when people are healthy and walking, but they want to get to the Olympics. Like, you don't see anybody in the Olympics that doesn't have a coach.
Right.
You wouldn't even dream of such a thing.
Right.
So,
and I love that because I think it challenges that belief, especially being men, that we need other people means weakness.
I love that you said that. That is the biggest pile of crap that I can think of in recent time. The idea that this rugged individualist and you're going to somehow do it on your own, get over yourself.
Yeah.
Nobody that ever got to the top of anything did that.
Right, right.
End of story.
Right. I love it. So as we wind down for today, you know, one question that I love to ask is, what is one piece of advice that you would like to leave for the audience today?
Love yourself. Mm-hmm. For crying out loud, you deserve to be tender, caring, compassionate, and kind to yourself, because you can't love anybody else more than you love yourself. And if you have a myth in your inside of you that says you can, you're fooling yourself. Mm-hmm. Take care of yourself, be compassionate, and lean into those yearnings and feelings that we all have from time to time that we tend to ignore and dismiss. Cultivate your intuition, lean into your divine gift, and be that beacon of light that you feel.
Wow, thank you. I love that. And help you be the catalyst for change and healing. Well, Kellen, thank you so much for coming on Friday Night Feels. This has been amazing. I could talk to you for hours, and I hope that you definitely come back and you can talk to us about your new books or anything, and hopefully we can connect you with some of those forgiveness coaches that I was mentioning. So once again, thank you for making the time, and thank you to everyone who watches. And remember, you know, we're on YouTube, and now we're, you know, the podcast platforms, and I hope you all have a beautiful weekend, and we'll see you in 2 weeks on the next Friday Night Feels. Take care, everyone.